You're listening to Play It Again, Swig. I'm your host, Jocelyn Swigger, and last summer I took time off practicing to have a baby. Maybe you can hear him. And now I'm trying to get my brain and my chops back in shape by learning the Chopin Etudes. So this is my audio diary of that process. Well, it's January 8th, Saturday, and I'm going to start with 10 number 6. This is from memory. Something like that. So you might have heard a little bit of background coughing. I have Ben with me as my special guest again. Ben is my six-month-old baby. And he is sick, unfortunately, although he's in very good spirits. He just has a cold. He's sick, and his dad is actually in Nicaragua right now, teaching art and helping out. So Ben is with me, and we'll just see how this podcast goes. This recording may go just fine, or it may not. So right now, he seems like he's happily chewing on his finger and playing with Jingle Dog, his little toy rattle, but we'll see. So 10 number 6, I think, even though I wasn't totally thrilled with how that particular performance went, I think I'm going to let this one rest for a while. You know, it's really, 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 really helpful when you learn new pieces of music to learn them, get the notes under your fingers, kind of get them into your brain, into your blood, and then let them, just put them away, let them sit on the shelf for a while. It's always, always better to come back to a piece the second time or the third time or the fourth time. And since this has been my first time ever learning this piece, I think I need to let it sit. It's kind of like letting bread dough rise. So I'm going to put this one away and I'm going to stop practicing it for a while. My plan, by the way, is to be able to play through all 24 etudes. I'm going to do I'll let the three etudes go for now, but I want to be able to play through all 24 etudes on October 24th, 2010, which is going to be my 40th birthday. No, I mean 2011. Sorry, wrong year. I was thinking that's wrong. Yeah, 2011 will be my 40th birthday. So I really want to play through all these Chopin etudes, the two sets, on my 40th birthday. Maybe not perfectly at tempo, maybe not exactly the way I want, but I do want to have them all, you know, in me enough that I can play them when I'm 40. So I'm going to need to let some of them rest for a little while just because my practice time is so limited. So I'm going to let 10 number 6 rest for a little while. I'm going to let it rest for a while. That's the plan. So the next thing I need to play for you is a before version of 10 number 2. This is one that I worked on in high school. So it feels familiar, and I am probably going to run into some memory traps because I learned it before I really understood music theory. I'm not going to play it for you from memory right now. And I'm also not going to play it for you up to tempo. Just so you know, tempo is this. So that would be like, which I'm just not ready to do yet. So I'm going to play this a little slower. So here's my before version of Opus 10 number 2 in A minor. What is hard about this, as you can probably hear, is that the right hand is playing all these little notes, but the thumb and the pointer finger, which are the strongest, sort of easiest fingers to control, are busy playing these chords. So if if I could play all this with my thumb, it would be totally easy. It would be fine. But I can't. I have to use my pinky and my ring finger and my third finger. So it ends up being kind of pretzel fingery. This is something that would have been completely easy for a harpsichord player to do. Sorry, I'm distracted because Ben is making a little bit of noise, but he's okay. Are you okay? Yeah, you're just talking. Okay. So my point is that this is something that would have been easy for harpsichord players to do, and the piano technique in Chopin's time was still very much informed by harpsichord technique. Harpsichord players were definitely used to playing smoothly from one finger to the next, even if it was like pinky to the ring finger. And the pianists who had been studying with pianists who had been studying with harpsichord players would have been good at that. Now that we tend to play piano, we're not so good at this. So that's a tricky thing. The main thing I'm going to have to do here is when I play this chord and then play the little notes and then play the next chord and play the little notes, is I have to make sure that I relax the part of my hand that played the chord. So I can't let it stay sort of hold there. Here I'm holding the low part. I don't want to do that. I need to let it be short, which is how he wrote it. See here I'm playing these chords short so that I can come off and bring that part of my hand up with the rest. So the way you need to work on this, there's a couple different things I'm going to do this week. One is, of course, I'm going to do it in groups of 4+1. So like, and then, and I'm not going to do that right hand alone, by the way. I'm going to do. And the other thing I need to do is I need to do just the chords with the left hand so that I have the musical feeling of it going. So those are the two things I'm going to do with Opus 10 number 2. And this is my pledge to you. I am not going to start playing. In fact, I'm not even going to play the first two pages of this thing this week. That's all of this stuff, which you can hear I'm pretty comfortable with. I mean, it's not perfect. It's not in tempo. I mean, it's not quite fast enough. But I can pretty much do it because I remember that really well from when I was in high school. But the place where the screaming really started is on the third page, this stuff. This is where the patterns get a little tricky, and you can hear it's going down, up, and up, and sort of turning around, and it's just, I won't make you listen to it again, because why torture you? But I'm going to start in measure 19, which is this right here, where it just was, And I'm going to practice up until measure 35, which is this. And then you land on measure 36, and it's the same thing as it was in the beginning. So I'm not going to let myself spend my precious, precious practice moments, which, oh my God, are so few, on this really fun thing that I can play. Not this week. This week, measures 19 to 35. That's it. I'm not allowed to play the rest of it. So that's my pledge. I'll try. Okay, let me switch next to talking about 10 number 5. Let me play this for you. This is the Black Key Etude. This one rest too. So this one along with 10 number 6, I'm going to just put on the shelf and not practice for a while. There still are plenty of details that I need to get in there, and I've been talking a big game over the last few weeks about not using too much pedal, and I used more pedal than I wanted to here. I will tell you that one thing that helped that is last week I was talking about how I really need to keep my core engaged, meaning basically I need to just suck in my gut, suck in my stomach. And I did make myself a little sign, and it says in capital letters, core, comma, and then it says Jocelyn, exclamation point. So I have my core Jocelyn sign, and it does help. It makes a really, really big difference in playing that. So I'm leaving that up there, not just for that piece, but for everything. But I'm going to let this piece rest. And then I'll pull it back out when I have learned more than those that I can't play at all. So the next piece I want to talk to you about is 10 number 4. And I'm totally distracted here for two reasons. One is that I heard a buzz when I was just playing through 10 number 5. And I'm a little bit worried that it might be something that's going to be expensive with my piano. My piano is actually in the living room, which is in the front room of my house. And we had the door open a couple times, more than we usually do, bringing in the Christmas tree and then bringing out the Christmas tree. And so my piano went out of tune a little faster than it usually did, and now it just made that little sound, and so I'm a little nervous about that. And also, Ben is kind of snorting over here, but I think he's okay. And he likes the Black Key Etude, and he also likes this 10 number 4 that I'm about to play, so I think we'll be fine. Anyway, so 10 number 4 said I was going to concentrate on the first two pages. Gesundheit, Ben. And I did. And I actually have this thing, the first two pages, pretty much up to tempo. Check this out. This is for the half note. This is 88. So it's about, I'll just play you the first two pages. Thank you. and so forth. At that point, I totally can't play it up to tempo at all. So I'm pretty happy with the way this one is coming. It's kind of sloppy. There's a lot of places where I don't feel as in control as I want. You might have heard a lot of wrong notes. But the basic kind of form of it is there. And something I think I really need to focus on now is having it be mostly soft with some moments of loud, rather than mostly loud with some moments of soft. I mean, there are plenty of moments of loud in this, but for example, the very beginning, he says loud, loud, and then soft, and then get louder. So that's much more exciting than just playing it loud, which is kind of what I did. So here's the not how you're supposed to do it version. So this is just loud. And here's what he actually says to do. So that's much better, and actually much more fun to play. So I need to focus more on my volume control here. I also have to deal with the third and fourth page. There's a spot here where it does this thing. And when I get to it, I go, oh yeah, I can kind of do that. And then when I think about how fast I'm doing it, it's way slower than it's supposed to be. So I need to make that easier. So, you know, same way I'm doing these little notes, this kind of thing. You can hear that that's kind of, yeah, this is kind of the same thing as this, right? But just upside down, where here now the pinky is staying, which fortunately is a little easier. But anyway, I need to work on that. So for this week, I'm going to focus on pages, 3 and 4? Yes, 3 and 4 for this, and not just play the beginning all the time. Although I am going to let myself play the beginning because it's really fun and I need to focus on the dynamics. So next I want to look at 10 number 7. This one is still pretty new. Well, the way I practiced this week, I won't play the whole thing, but was... to get the transition from one place to the other. I think I need to actually switch my practicing. I'm going to do a different strategy this week. I definitely need to go back to just doing this to teach myself where the hand positions go, because for example right here I don't exactly know and I need to. So I'm going to go back to doing my simplified chord skeleton here, which will be fun to do. The other thing I think I need to do is to sort of deal with the repeated notes, which is really the crux of the piece. Okay, so we have sort of sets of chords that go in pairs of two, right? So like this is a pair of two, and you can hear the bottom note is the same. And then the bottom note is the same, and then the bottom note is the same, and that repeats, that stays pretty much through the whole piece. Okay, so what's hard about that is actually making sure that the note comes up fast enough. So what I want to do is I want to play in every pair of two, I want to play the first chord and then just the second note. So instead of it being, it'll be like that. So I'm going to need to work on that. So I am going to do that for this next week. And this is probably going to take a while. And that's okay. That's okay. I have to say, I do love this little waltzy part here. I'm going to do a sort of a cheating version. This is measure 17. And of course, this is exactly the same kind of pivoting thing that I'm working on in every piece, pretty much. So here... anyway, this is just really fun. Let me just play the left hand for this. And then we have this. Anyway, that's just a fun little moment that I like a lot. And I expect to like it more when I can play it better. So that's what I'm going to do with that. All right, so speaking of pivoting, right, here's this pivoting thing. So, temp number 9, this F minor thing with... so I finally did look at some YouTube videos and do some listening. And, you know, I have to confess that the reason that it took me so long to do that is that I've been feeling... well, I was just being a wuss about it. I was feeling like, oh, I'm going to listen to all these wonderful players and they're going to be so much better than I could ever play. And it's just going to make me feel like I can't do it and it'll be depressing and I don't want to do it. And of course, I did hear a lot of wonderful players who are just amazing. But the thing I forgot before I did it is that that's actually really inspiring. So I heard a recording that's so much like the way I want to be able to play it. And that was really wonderful to hear. And that was actually by Solomon, who's a pianist who died in like 1988, I think, something like that. So here's my report from my YouTube explorations of this one. Solomon was just an absolutely gorgeous recording. I loved it. Rubinstein had a gorgeous sound like he always does. I mean, he just always has that beautiful, rich, warm, round sound. I thought that his tempo was pretty slow. And one of the things that did is it made the climax points really exciting because it's like he was coming from somewhere. But I felt like the beginning, like the opening character of it was not as well, Chopin says, allegro molto agitato, which means allegro is lively or fast. Molto means a lot, and agitato means agitated. So I think for it to be really agitated, it has to be pretty fast. Yeah, oh, speaking of agitated, Ben is getting agitated, so I may have to cut this part off pretty soon. Anyway, this part, if it's, you know, here... To me, that doesn't really sound molto agitato, really agitated. To me, that sounds more agitated, and that's closer to the dynamic mark, to the tempo marking that Chopin said. Chopin said to play it at 96, which is this. Which is really fast, by the way. a lot of people play it slower than that, which was sort of interesting to find. It was also a little bit heartening, I have to admit, to hear that a lot of people, you know, a lot of the older pianists, the recordings are not edited the way recordings now are edited. Like every recording you hear that's recorded now is going to be just edited pretty much to every note. So you don't hear wrong notes on modern recordings. But if you listen to the old recordings, you hear a lot of wrong notes. Partly just because they didn't do the editing and so they didn't fix the notes. And the other thing that's cool about that is that it totally doesn't matter. Like you hear these wrong notes and you actually don't hear them because the overall music is gorgeous. Okay, Ben is fussing. Oh. Okay, you know what? I'm going to take a break. Okay, we're back. One clean diaper later. You know, if I had wet pants, I wouldn't want to sit and listen to me talk and play the piano either, so... He seems fine. We will carry on. This is, by the way, totally how my practicing often goes. Anyway, so I was watching YouTube videos. One of the things that I found as a very interesting idea that I'm going to totally steal, which several people did, is in this place where I'm always complaining about how it's so hard on the second page. You'll know, I'm sure, because I will probably yell as I usually do. A lot of people actually rush the right hand at one point, but don't rush the left hand, and it makes it sound faster in the easy part, but it doesn't actually make the hard part any harder. I'm going to steal that. That was really cool. It was also kind of nice to hear that, you know, the second page is hard for other people too, even the truly great golden era pianists. Just a couple of other reports about pianists that I really liked. Courteau, of course, his playing is always gorgeous. I liked Solomon more just because it was more like every moment was, ooh, I love that, I love that. But Courteau, of course, is always beautiful playing. There was a pianist whose playing I didn't know, Edward Kilieny. This is a 1937 recording that was really fast and sparkling and not quite as moving as some of the other recordings. But boy, there was a lot going on in there with just like fast, brilliant playing. It was really exciting to hear. Sifra was kind of like he tends to be. He does a lot with having the right and left hands not be exactly together. So instead of like, I'll do it slowly to show you. So instead of having them be together, here I'm doing these together. He might do something like. Which is actually something that people used to do a lot. And, actually, you know what? I'm going to talk to you about Chopin rubato on another day. Anyway, that was an interesting stylistic choice that he made, and it was kind of nice to hear that. But I didn't totally love listening to most of his playing. So I'm going to play this for you, and we'll see how it goes. This is from memory with stealing a couple of ideas. Thank you. So the second page is still really hard and may just continue to be hard for a while, but I'm going to keep working on it. I don't know that I have any particularly new strategies for this week, except that I do need to go back to practicing this way, which I stopped this last week, and I think was actually really helpful. So this was a week that I added in the middle notes, but I think I need to both do with the middle notes and also just the jumping. So I'm going to do that for this week. Okay, so the only one left is 10 number one, which is the first one, and this is this one. You know what? I'm not going to do it. I don't have it right now. It'll just be a mess and no fun to play and probably not any fun to listen to. I decided I'm going to institute a new feature in this podcast because I told you I was going to find this quote, and I did, and then I realized, why not just have a sort of quote of the day? So here is the quote of the day. This is from this fantastic book called Chopin Pianist and Teacher, as seen by his pupils, by Jean-Jacques Eigeldinger. So this is a whole bunch of primary sources by people who studied with Chopin, but also people who saw him play. So, diaries, letters, that sort of thing. So it's really, this is a great, great source. I'll put a link up on the website. Keep in mind that I complain about my small hands, right? Chopin's physical suppleness was legendary, particularly in the context of his famous improvised mimes. According to Gutmann, he could, like a clown, throw his legs over his shoulders, right? So my yoga practice that I'm doing has got to be a good thing. Stephen Heller told me that it was a wonderful sight to see one of those small hands expand and cover a third of the keyboard. This is, and here comes the sentence I was going to find for you. It was like the opening of the mouth of a serpent, which is going to swallow a rabbit whole. In fact, Chopin appeared to be made of rubber. And then Madame Peruzzi remarked, his fingers seemed to be without any bones, but he would bring out certain effects by great elasticity. So that's, the jaws of a serpent, that's the idea of opening here and then closing here and then opening, closing. I have been working on that this week. I think it's coming. I think I also need to make sure that I do this, which I haven't done. I need to do this at tempo. This is kind of like this from the last one. I need to do this. So I'm just doing my thumb and my pinky. So instead of this, I'm doing just the thumb and the pinky. So that's going to make me, if I can do that with the opening and closing of the hand, that'll make me put the arm where it needs to go at the right speed, and that should actually work pretty nicely. The other thing I have to confess to you is that this week I didn't do my slow metronome practicing, this, with the click. I didn't do that because I just couldn't quite get to it. So I need to make sure I do that. I think that's going to be really important for me, not necessarily for me playing this piece, but for me dealing with my lifelong rushing situation. So that's kind of where I am with 10 number one, and that's kind of where I am with 10 number everything. I do want to add one other new feature today, which is I thought it might be fun to sort of give you a fact of the day. So here's my fact of the day about Chopin. This is something that I either didn't know or had forgotten, but read and was surprised by. So maybe it'll surprise some of you. So let me give you an introduction before I give you my fact. So the introduction is that Chopin, as you may or may not know, is famous for being sort of the quintessential Polish composer. He lived most of his adult life in France, but he was famously very homesick for Poland. He wrote a lot of pieces that were inspired by Polish dances, like the mazurkas. So Poles feel a real sense of ownership for him. And I think I said before that this edition that I'm actually working from, which is beautiful, it's the national edition from Poland. So he's really considered to be Mr. Poland composer. Now, I've always thought that there's a Frenchness to a lot of his music. There's sort of a subtlety, and not that Polish culture or anything couldn't be subtle, but just thinking about like the French language and sort of stereotyping French cooking, even if you think about how the sauces are really complex and sort of perfect. I think that in a similar way that a French sauce can be complex, I think that some of Chopin's, especially harmonies, can be complex. So I think there's a real Parisian sophistication to a lot of Chopin's music. Anyway, here comes the fact of the day. Chopin's dad was French. I had no idea. So his father, French guy, moves to Poland, meets Polish woman, falls in love with her. They have Chopin. Kid grows up when he's, I think, 17 or so, moves back to Paris. So this idea of Chopin as being French isn't just that he moved to the place. He actually was probably feeling pretty French when he was in Poland. So I thought that was really interesting. Hope you do too. So I'll try and come up with a fact and a quote for every week from now on. That might be kind of fun. Okay, Ben is tired of this and has been remarkably patient. I think that's going to be it for this. Have a great week, and thanks so much for being my practice buddy. And thank you, Ben, for being my practice buddy. Yeah. And now we're all done.